Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blankers, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I didn't think you were going to make it into the studio. You're out there in the bullpen watching regional qualifying of the Little League World Series, Wisconsin and Petawick. I don't know.
No, Minnesota.
And Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Hey, my Wisconsin guys don't normally get this far, and they got screwed on the last call by Blue, who ran to his car to get in his four-wheeler to go home.
It's the Metro Region double elimination tournament, and you're...
Damn right.
Flipping your mind about
okay. Well, we already found this out, but I also watched Pearland to coast to an easy victory and be one game away from Williamsport yesterday, and you weren't anywhere near it. You like college baseball, but you won't support the locals with a chance to go to the big stage.
I'll support the locals. I'm just not going to watch six innings of Little League Baseball.
I didn't say I watched six. They were up so big I could turn it off in the fourth.
But it sounds like you're entrenched. It sounds like you know the ride. It sounds like you know what needs to be done for them to reach Williamsport, Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
It seems like you're going to be glued into every single one of their results. Look, I'll root for them, but watching Little League World Series? Probably not.
There wasn't a whole lot else on, for one. But when I found it, even my wife was going, is there significance in this? Why are you watching this? And then when I told her, she was like, okay, you better give me
what was your answer? What was the significance?
I was like, Pearland is playing the team from, I think, Abilene that went to the World Series a year ago. And if they win, they're one game from going to the Little League World Series. And then she was like, oh, I might need this for the newscast tomorrow. Tell me more. So then I told her a few more details, and then she still didn't care. But I watched the majority of the game.
Smart woman. Is that Pearland coach with the dreadlocks still there?
Only now he's not the head coach. He's in the dugout, and they got a big beef eater that is the third base coach.
Do you still have the dreadlocks?
Yeah. They're worse. You know what Fromber got for the All-Star game?
Yeah.
That's what he's got going.
I saw him at an Astros game. Like the year, I think they've been to the Little League World Series. The year that they were at the Little League World Series, I saw him at the Astros game like 2 weeks later. I was like, hey, great job.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely a little bit less front and center, but he's still there. He's in the dugout.
From Little League Baseball to Major League Baseball, things that matter. The Astros split the four-game series in Cleveland. They won the first two. They did enough, and then they put the bats to sleep for the final two games. But even though the Astros lost the last two, it doesn't really matter a whole lot in terms of chasing the top spot in the American League because the dreaded Yankees are five games back. Or they've lost five in a row, rather.
Yeah.
So the Astros still have the same distance since they won the two games of the series Thursday, Friday, entering the weekend. What's more valuable? Home field advantage in the American League playoffs, getting the one seed, of course, or the easier path?
See, I've been contemplating this. I mean, as much as I believe in Minute Maid Park, and I think that it's a raucous environment for any visiting team to play in, I think that the path of least resistance is probably the best-case scenario for this team while it's still working everything out and you're trying to figure out if Brantley's coming back and what your rotation's going to look like and all the things that they've been tinkering with. I feel like if it's teams that you already know, and especially they already know, you can beat, like the Mariners or the Twins or teams like that, I think your chances are a lot better than catching a hot Blue Jays team with a whole lot of talent at the wrong time.
Also, the fact that it's a five-game series. So, like, Toronto can throw Alex Manoah at you 40% of those games. He can pitch game one. He could go on short rest game four, be available for game five. Yep. So, like, now they have a legitimate dude, right? They have a dude at the top of their rotation. Look, home field advantage is great. There's no guarantee, too, that you wouldn't have home field advantage in every single series.
Well, if the Yankees get upset, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, the Yankees could still lose their series. Yankees haven't been playing great ball as of late. But if you play against the Yankees, look, you went into Yankee Stadium. You split the four games you played in Yankee Stadium and could have very easily won the other two that you did not win. You had a lead late. I'd rather have the path of least resistance, if I'm being completely honest with you. I'm totally okay with the two seed for the Houston Astros. It's why I'm still going to criticize Dusty Baker's lineups every single day, but I'm not going to criticize the guys that aren't playing, the days off. You want to get Jose Altuve a day off because it's getaway day in Cleveland? That's fine, even if it means you lose the game and you get shut out. Give Kyle Tucker an extra day coming off his little stomach bug. That's fine. Like, I'm not going to worry about the guys that are getting days off. Now, how he configures his lineup and lineup construction, that's another conversation. And we also wish Dusty Baker very well. He's battling with COVID. Hope he's okay. But that's why I don't really care about the days off a whole lot. Like, I'd rather face the winner of Minnesota, and as it would be today, Seattle, than facing the winner of Toronto and Tampa Bay. Not that you have, like, this defeatist attitude and a loser's mentality of, oh, I want to duck Toronto. Oh, I want to duck Tampa Bay. To me, it's more about the odds. You have a much better chance of reaching the ALCS if it's Minnesota-Seattle than Toronto-Tampa Bay.
We've talked about this as it translates to basketball playoffs as well. Would you rather be in a grueling seven-game series where you got to battle your ass off, and by the time you get out of it, win or lose, you're exhausted, and then you got to recharge the batteries and go right away at another team? Or do you want to kind of coast knowing that, you know, you're in full command of the series and you take care of it in a shorter term than normally it takes to get through it, and you're waiting for the next opponent and you're rested and you're ready to go? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that as much as you're not running from the competition, if it lays out for you that that's the better path to take, how many times do we see playoff teams that say, with a game or two remaining on the schedule, hey, you know what, we could win both those games, but we could have a tougher path than if we rested, quote-unquote, rested our starters with minor injuries and found a way to slide one down and figure out a better matchup for you.
Yeah, see, one thing that worries me, too, in baseball, like, baseball's meant to be 162 games, right? You get this body of work, who has the best record after 162. Like, to me, baseball is very much a marathon sport, not a sprint sport. Anything can happen in one game. It's why the Astros go into Oakland and get swept, right? Anything can happen over the course of one game. The wild card series is three games. Astros trying to get into the top two, which looks pretty comfortable and safe right now. They wouldn't have to worry about that three-game wild card series. Anything can happen in a three-game series. I think that anything can happen in a seven-game series, whether it's an ALCS, whether it's a World Series. We saw last year in seven games, Astros lose to the Braves in six. We saw the 2019 World Series. The Astros lost every single home game of a seven-game series. Anything can happen in a best of seven. Five-game ALDS series scare the heck out of me. They frighten me. And if it means that I have to face Alex Manoa twice for a five-game series, you could potentially lose that series to a lineup that features George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero. The list goes on and on. Give me Minnesota, who I'm not scared about. Give me Seattle, who you've been able to take their lunch money ever since the All-Star break when they thought that they had a shot. Give me the path of least resistance if I'm looking ahead
now,
to the postseason.
You know you're going to hear people that say, well, Seattle's got Castillo now, so now they've got an ace. Yep. So now you got to see him.
He's not as good as Manoa,
that's fine,
in my opinion.
I still look at their lineup and go, does Jesse Winker put fear in you? No. I mean, when you look at the guys they put out there, they're putting a designated hitter that's 49 years old. They're putting a Jesse Winker in left field. Yeah, they got J-Rod, and they've got a couple of players, and you know France can hit. But overall, from 1 to 9, there's not a whole lot that puts fear in your belly when you're playing the Mariners.
Toronto scares you some.
Oh, boy, they do.
I mentioned Manoa a couple of times already because Manoa, I think, is one of the top three pitchers in all of the American League. Verlander, Manoa, and you want to throw Shane McClanahan in there. Dylan Cease is really good, too, for Chicago. Like, that's probably the short list of best pitchers in the AL. I didn't even mention Gerrit Cole. Look, Luis Castillo is their ace, is Seattle's ace. Luis Castillo is not an elite starting pitcher compared to the ones we just mentioned, the Verlanders, the Coles, the Manoas, the Ceases, the McClanahans. Castillo is probably second tier, and that's very good. Julio Rodriguez is going to be a star and has already shown that he's the best rookie in all of baseball this season. And I like the future of Seattle. But you mentioned 1 through 9, they got some holes. They got Mitch Haniger back, all of that, but they still have some holes. And he doesn't really like move the needle, right? Haniger doesn't. Well, so, and then the other starters too, like Robbie Ray, the Astros have his number. They've brought in some of the other starters that we've seen. I like the young kid. I forget his name. Gilbert. Gilbert's a pretty good pitcher. But give me Seattle over Toronto. We've seen the Astros' success over Seattle. So, like, it kind of brings you to yesterday's game and Saturday's game to an extent, too. Is it frustrating you get shut out? Yes, absolutely. You do it without a lot of your regulars playing in that game. It's frustrating. You hate to see it. You don't like to watch it, especially for those that get up for every single game of 162. But if you look big picture with the Houston Astros, one, they're still on pace to have their best record ever. They have an identical record through this amount of games than they did in 2017 when they won the World Series. They're going to win over 100 games. They're going to be a top two seed. And on top of that, finishing second might be better than finishing first.
And that's the thing. And you know that they're not done losing games they probably should win because you know that they still, because of the size of their lead in the division, they're going to experiment. We know, and we're going to talk about Lance McCullers. We want to know what they're going to do at center field, so they're going to have some options. We don't know what they're going to do with Hunter Brown, but maybe you see him up in late August and early September so that they can figure out what they're doing there. They're trying to work out different ways to use their bullpen and who can do what. So there's going to be a lot of experimentation. There's going to be a lot of fluctuation within the lineup because there's just way too much of a pad for them not to, so they can be the best prepared that they need to be for the playoffs.
There's also going to be experimentation throughout the rotation, too. So, like, you're going to see a lot of tinkering. You're going to see – maybe we'll see Trey Mancini play outfield someday. Who knows if he's going to play outfield someday? Also, like, I'm wondering, too, if maybe they start tinkering with the lineup a little bit with what they've done these last couple of games. It doesn't – like, Dusty doesn't like making those big moves, right? Like, we saw Yuli in the two-hole. He took off. Like, I'm wondering if the offense continues to sputter if we see Dusty Baker try to make some changes with the batting lineup to try to spark them back into reality.
Pawpaw's got to get out of a hotel room.
You know he's still making those lineup cards, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that whether he – had a bellman bring the lineup on a handwritten piece of paper to Joe Espada, because I'm not sure how much he texts or uses electronic devices. One way or another, you know he was still picking out the lineup. But I think that the other thing is when you're talking to Trey Mancini and saying, look, you know, we want to get you in the lineup as many places as possible, and you work it out to say, as long as you're cool with it, let's get you some reps in the outfield because there's another opportunity, and especially because James Click did a whole lot of nothing in terms of what he told you about Michael Brantley, except for you should be concerned. You should be very, very concerned. And so, therefore, the time is now, if you're trying to get a guy ready for the playoffs to play left field, to get as many reps as possible. Again, why you have a double-digit lead in the division, and you have the leeway to be able to do those things.
What if you don't get Brantley back? That's a conversation we need to have. Also, 713-780-ESPN. What is more valuable, the home field advantage or the easier path? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5. But before we do all of that, I got to tell you about the best basketball goal on the planet. You already know what it is. It's ProDunk Hoops. They are the best. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel. Adjustable goals for every part of the game. You can lower it, throw down some jams, raise it up to regulation, work at that 10-foot height, work on that shot, whether it's you or whether you have a kid working on their game. We know all these kids on the AAU circuit, they would love to have these goals in their driveway, work on that shot, make them better at what they do. Also, if they are throwing down some jams, competition grade, breakaway rim, it's perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. One thing that I love, the extended overhang, which keeps a clear path under the rim. You don't have to worry about that basketball stanchion and rolling your ankle on that thing. So it keeps you and your loved one safe. Durability is a strength of ProDunk Hoops. They have their stainless steel fasteners. They have thicker steel. And, of course, being in Houston, they have to have exclusive rust armor, which they do, and it makes them sturdy and strong. You're finding nothing like this in the big box stores. One other thing that they offer that you won't find in the big box stores, they'll do all the work. They will install the goal. The pros at ProDunk Hoops professionally install your goal, perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at ProDunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Give them a call, 281-351-9822. That's 281-351-9822. And visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What is the what is more important to you? What do you value more for the Houston Astros the rest of the regular season? Is it that home field advantage? Is it the easier path for the Houston Astros once you get to the playoffs? Because the playoffs started today. You're looking at 3-seed Minnesota, 6-seed Seattle. Winner of that one gets Houston. Toronto, Tampa Bay. Winner of that one gets New York. Toronto, scary. Tampa Bay's quirky. 713-780-ESPN. What would you rather have, the home field advantage or the path of least resistance? Blankers, you mentioned the Michael Brantley thing that is going on. He hasn't played in nearly a month and a half now for the Houston Astros. He's got the Jeff Bagwell shoulder. I'm just kidding. He's got a different injury, but starting to feel like that a little bit.
Sounds more like he's got a Lance McCullers arm issue.
What's wrong with Lance McCullers' arm? He's looking sharp.
No, but how long it took to get Lance McCullers to look sharp. I'm just talking about the amount of time it's taken from Michael Brantley to just sit a little couple games out to where we are now. It's very bothersome.
What's the opposite of bionic? Because that's Brantley's shoulder. That was Bagwell's shoulder. But anyways.
Fragile?
Yeah, fragile shoulder. We'll leave it at that. Anyways, James Click, the Astros general manager, he was on with the Astros pregame show yesterday. Robert Ford, very, very big fan of the ESPN 97.5 lineup. We had him on the other day on the bench. But anyways, Robert asked him about Brantley. He asked him if he's going to play again this season. And James Click, to this point, has kind of scoffed at the idea that he's out for the year. Said, look, it's day-to-day, but it's not long-term. He's alluded to the fact that he's going to be back at some point for the Houston Astros. But Click telling Ford, and this to me was the, I guess, doom and gloom answer, the first time we've really seen a little bit of doom and gloom from James Click. He said, we hope so, but with every passing day, you have to kind of take an honest look at it. So this is a far cry from scoffing at the idea that he's done for the year, saying it's not a season ender. Now you're saying we hope we get him back, but with every passing day, you got to be honest about the situation. He said there's no update, but this, in terms of like the comments that Click has made about Brantley to this point, this is obviously the one that you're going to interpret worse than any of the others.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that's why you got Trey Mancini, and whether there was a definitive plan to try him or play him in the outfield or not, he's a guy that's been there and done that no matter when it happened in his career, to where the question becomes, can he do it again? Because you're going to have to cover your bases the same way that Click said he lost sleep at night thinking about if Maldonado got hurt and not having a backup that could step in and do something. I think this is exactly the same scenario. What if Michael Brantley can't come back? Well, if you didn't do anything at the deadline to try and reinforce that position, that's on you. But because you've got a guy that has the versatility we've talked about, then get him ready and plan for worst case scenario. Best case scenario is Brantley's back. Now you've got a great problem to have with too many good bats to be all in the lineup at one time. But you got your butt covered and your bases covered, then play him there so that you can cover it if you need to with the worst case scenario if Brantley can't come back.
I think you look at the lineup every day and you can see tells. Like, they're going to give guys days off. It's just the way it's going to be. Jose Altuve is not going to play some days. Yuli's not going to play some days. But you can start to pick up information on what the Astros think of certain players based on the lineup they put out there. Jordan Alvarez and Trey Mancini were in the lineup Friday and Saturday. They both were in the lineup Friday and Saturday. The guy playing left field was Jordan Alvarez, not Trey Mancini. So, like, if you ask the question, what if you don't get Michael Brantley back? I still think you're going to see a timeshare in left field of, like, basically it's going to be same thing that you saw with Brantley and Jordan, that one of them is going to be in left field, and when the other one's not in left field, the other one's going to be DHing. I believe we're still going to see that for the most part. Yuli's going to get his day off. Mancini's going to fill in for first base when Yuli has the day off. But until you get Brantley back, and if you don't get Brantley back, you're going to see a timeshare left field DH of Jordan Alvarez, Trey Mancini. And based on how the Astros handled Cleveland, they think more of Jordan Alvarez as a left fielder than Trey Mancini.
Yeah, and that concerns me to some degree, because I was going to ask you, are the early returns on the fact that it looks like no matter what we thought or hoped or had tried to lay out for you as the game plan for Vasquez going forward, it looks like he's going to be the legitimate backup catcher and catch every, you know, third or fourth day, depending on how the schedule looks. Are you okay with that? Because it looks like those are two decisions that are going to be made internally that I don't know that I have 100% agreement with, because I believe, like I said, with the pad that you have, you should at least experience, unless Mancini says, I don't want to be out there. And I don't think with the attitude and his quotes to this point, I think he said just the exact opposite. Wherever you need me, wherever you want me to play, I'm here to help this team. I'm all for it. Let's do it. Well, throw him out there. And if Minute Maid left field is too much, or he doesn't have the comfortability that he had once before, then so be it. Then you know that. But don't sit there and shut the door because you don't think you should put him out there.
See, I think they're saving him for Minute Maid. I think they're saving him for Minute Maid Park, which is an easier left field to navigate because there's not as much room.
It's short, yeah.
But Cleveland wasn't. I mean, Cleveland's not big either. Yeah. Cleveland, I mean, you're looking at 320, 325 down the line, 370 to the power alley. Now, the pushback there is, well, it's big in right. It's big in right center. It's bigger in center. So now you're kind of positioning your outfield in different ways to where Mancini has to cover more ground in left field, or your left fielder has to cover more ground in left field. So They don't view Trey Mancini as much of an outfielder. I think we're going to see him in left field, but I think it's going to be in specialized instances. I think it's going to be when they're playing at Minute Maid Park. I think it's going to be when they're playing at home this season. So I think you kind of have to wait until the Astros come home. Now, the problem that, look, I think Trey Mancini is going to play more than he does. And he's going to be pretty much an everyday guy, whether it's left field DH filling in for Yuli at first base whenever he's getting the day off or he's cold. The one fear that I have with this idea, and the fear that, you know, Michael Brantley potentially couldn't be back, is now you're asking Yordan Alvarez to play left field a majority of the games. And that's something that I don't like to see. Yordan Alvarez is fragile. Yeah, Yordan Alvarez is injury prone. We've seen that his entire career. So whenever you use Yordan Alvarez in the outfield and you use him as a fielder, he's playing defense and not just DHing, you're almost doubling, and maybe even more than doubling, the opportunity for him to get hurt. And if Yordan Alvarez goes down, you can kiss your season goodbye. So playing him out in left field every day, yeah, it gives you your best offense, and it gives you a better left fielder than Trey Mancini. At least the Astros would tell you that. The fear that is you're putting an injury-prone guy at risk, and an injury-prone guy that if you lost, especially with Brantley being out, your season's done.
Yeah, and when you look at it, too, he plays a lot like Kyle Tucker does, only maybe more so on weed. You know, he's so kind of laid back that he makes every play look like he's just had a really good blunt and he's ready to just watch, a chick flick. I mean, he just seems like no matter how intense the ball is hit down the line or whatever, or there's a fly ball where it looks like he's got to get 50 yards of ground covered, he's kind of like, yeah, I'm going to get there. And if I don't, I'm not going to get there, but it's going to be all right. He just doesn't have that intensity in the outfield. And you're right. If he gets hurt, we're talking about a whole different scenario that no one wants to talk about. So if you have other options, I don't understand why we're still putting him out there.
Yeah, I think that the option is you think of him more defensively than Mancini,
which is scary, too. And I understand he's got an underrated arm.
I do think Yordan's a better left fielder than Mancini.
Right. Okay, fine. But again, when you weigh the consequences, is it putting him in harm's way too much with what he's been through this year? With
his
thumb, with the legs that he's been dealing with in the past, and just saying, look, especially for this season, and until he gets, he completely gets to heal from all the injuries from this season, I don't want him to do too much because he does too much for you when he's in the lineup offensively.
Yeah, I will sacrifice a little bit defensively if it means that I'm protecting Yordan. It's been our stance all year long. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot lose Yordan Alvarez. You lose Yordan Alvarez, you lose the best hitter in all of baseball, and your offense goes from what has been mediocre, if we're being completely honest with you, to a below-average offense. I mean, could you imagine this lineup in the postseason without Yordan Alvarez? So, like, anybody who says, oh, I'm not of that logic to where, Yordan needs to only be a DH and put bubble wrap around him. All right, well, let me position you with this question. If Yordan Alvarez sustains an injury playing left field, let's say it's collision with Jeremy Peña, because that's actually happened. Yep. Let's say he crashes into the wall, breaks his wrist, something like that. What do you think of the Astros' chances the rest of the year? So, like, the anti, oh, yeah, you can't put bubble wrap around Yordan Alvarez. He's got to be able to play defense. Does he? You have a DH spot now in baseball. You lose him, your season's over. You lose the best hitter in all of baseball. So, yeah, put bubble wrap around the guy that is your ticket to potentially having a deep playoff run.
It's like saying, what would the Red Sox be without David Ortiz, right? There's a reason why David Ortiz stayed, for the most part, as a designated hitter, because they couldn't afford to lose David Ortiz. Think about that and then make the analogy with the Astros and realize we're talking about the same thing offensively. We're talking about a guy that stirs the drink, that makes everything happen, that is your best chance for extra base hits and home runs, that hits for average and hits for power. You don't want him out of your lineup. And because you know he's been dinged up this year, you want to take the same way we say take the least path in terms of who you play to get to the World Series, take the path of least resistance with Yordan Alvarez, mm-hmm. so that you don't run the risk of him getting hurt. And even if it's missing a game or two, like we said, in a 5-game series, could be the difference between winning or losing a series later in the year. You don't want that.
Yeah. Ocho's saying it looks like Mancini's first base DH only. He's been used that way. I feel that they're going to use him in left field at Minute Maid Park. Easier left field to navigate. What if Brantley's done for the year, though? What if you don't get Brantley back? What is the plan? 713-780-ESPN. Is it Yordan primarily is your left fielder every day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What do you do if Michael Brantley is indeed done, if you don't get Michael Brantley back? 713-780-ESPN. What should the plan be for Dusty if you don't? 713-780-3776. Some people giving us their suggestions that don't really apply here. But 3364 says, Bubble Boy Yordan. Yeah, absolutely. You should be treating Yordan Alvarez like the Bubble Boy off Seinfeld, where you only let him out of his bubble when he comes to bat. Because any, like, and then somebody else comparing, like, saying that comparing him to David Ortiz isn't a great comparison because Yordan's capable of playing defense and doing it all right. I agree with that. Yordan Alvarez is a better left fielder than David Ortiz ever was as a first baseman. Agreed. But Yordan Alvarez's number one strength and the biggest value that he brings to this team is with his bat. Playing him in the outfield daily is dangerous. It's right. Dangerous to risking the chances of Yordan not being in your
the
lineup.
The impact is scarily similar when you think about how big of an impact both big bats had in their lineups. And you don't have to watch the Jeter documentary to be reminded, but if you did, you'd be reminded real quick. When the Red Sox came back from 3-0, it was Ortiz in every single game dominating offensively. Mm-hmm. That's what Yordan is capable of doing, too. So it's not moronic. It's moronic to text in and think that, you know, that's not something that should be considered, because Poppy could play first base. And you know, he could be out there at first base, but why would you risk him getting his Achilles stepped on or have something happen where he could get hurt and not be the most impactful offensive player on your roster? It makes zero sense. Same thing with the Astros. If you have any other options, with as many options as they're floating out there in center field and otherwise, why the hell would you try and continue to push the option that puts your best offensive player at risk? Maybe next year, maybe as he continues to develop and he's healthier at the start of a fresh season, if that's really something that you want to focus on. But there's just too big of a risk to try and keep throwing him out there in left field.
I think I would do it in the playoffs. Like, at least in the playoffs, you're playing games of significance and stakes.
It also depends on the stakes, right? If you're playing from behind, you need your best offensive lineup. I could see throwing him out there if you feel like he's better than Mancini.
Yeah, I mean, playoffs to me are like, okay, fine. Like, if you think that is your best nine every single day,
but
that's
gets hurt before you get there?
Right. I mean, the playoffs, to me, it's because there's risk playing him defensively every day. And the risk is that he could injure himself because he's an injury-prone guy and has a history of injuries. It's not like, it's not a loser's mentality to think the possibility of Yordan getting hurt exists, because he has been hurt a good chunk of his career. So you're trying to protect him against his own proneness to injury. Now, why, like, it would be, let's just assume he got hurt yesterday. It's August 7th. It's a getaway day in Cleveland. That would be a terrible time to lose him. Now, if there's stakes on the line, if it's because you're playing in game one of the division series against Toronto, Tampa, Minnesota, or Seattle, that's when it makes sense. Okay, well, he's a better outfielder. We need our best nine out there. Okay, I get it. But during the course of the regular season, I would say no to that.
Well, especially with the big lead you have.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, I'd rather...
You can experiment with a lot of things, yeah, but experiment with a healthy guy that you're trying to see if he can play a new position, as opposed to a guy that, I guess, based on the textures and otherwise, you feel enough confidence to say he already knows he can play out there. Well, then don't play him out there.
And let's be honest, too. The Astros aren't really, you know, banging on the table to win every single game. They're not. And I'm not even saying that that's wrong.
There were a lot of throwaway at-bats yesterday.
Getaway day, you see that a lot. Yep. Over the course of 162. I mean, the lineup is one thing, too. Like, you, and also, like, you know, it's a late game. Sometimes the Astros rather give a guy a full day off than use him in a pinch-hit opportunity. That wasn't the case yesterday, because they used Tucker, they used Altuve, they used Vasquez. But the Astros, look, and they've been able to put themselves in a position to do this. They have a luxury where they have a huge lead in the division and a top two spot in the American League, to where they don't have to play every day to give them the best chance to win a game. They are looking at the 162. They are looking at the big picture. They are looking for the playoffs. And I actually agree with that. I don't disagree with that. Like, if it means you throw away a Sunday game because you're worried about, you know, Verlander not going an extra inning, okay, that's the right thing to do. Like, there's no argument there. But if the Astros are telling you that they're looking more at the playoffs than they are about some random game on August 7th, okay, maybe don't use Yordan Alvarez in left field in any games and see what you got in Mancini out there and at least get the idea of, okay, this guy's not going to be good enough to play outfield defensively. A few people on our Twitch blinkers, 713-780-ESPN on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. They're saying that Jake Meyers shouldn't play at all. He had that game, I think it was Saturday, where he had a couple of hits, and it's like, okay, maybe he
look
can
at the
get
box
back on
score,
track.
Not the highlights.
Yeah, yeah. They were kind of perfectly positioned. Yep. Well, he had a couple. He had one off the wall, but the other double down the line was kind of, okay, that was positioned nicely. I don't disagree with this. Jake Meyers does not look right to me. I was listening to the radio broadcast yesterday, and they were talking about how he hasn't really shown the want-to to just fire in a throw to second base from the outfield. They're saying that he's real hesitant and tentative
you
with that shoulder.
There was a chance that he had a play at the plate and just decided to hit the cutoff man And you're like, okay. I mean, that, add that to the list of things where he looks apprehensive.
Sparks was making it seem like he's apprehensive, that he's tentative, that he's not just letting it fly. We've seen it. We've seen it with his ability to go to the wall. We've seen it with his take charge ability coming in on little balls in Bermuda's Triangle where he lets Yordan and Pena collide when he should be calling them off.
Or if he catches it, he still grabs the shoulder a little bit. If he misses it, he is like milking both shoulders.
Yeah. So, like, the question now becomes, like, what do you do with Jake Myers? Because they don't seem to think that Chaz McCormick's a center fielder. He's only started one game in center field since Jake Myers has come back. Whatever you do with Jake is hurting his confidence, right? Like, I get the idea that you don't want to send him down because it's going to mess with him psychologically. But the way he's struggling right now is also messing with him psychologically.
I think you're almost to the point of no return where he's so far gone, you can't get him back. Because I think that you need to look for things right now simply just to build his morale back up. You know, regardless of whether it's seeing eye baseballs or not, getting two hits in a game at least made him smile for the first time in a long time, to where at least he could feel a little of the pressure taken off, because you can tell he's pressing, but he also knows the weight of the world from the fan base to the organization to everything that Click says when he opens his mouth is, I'm not only the center field of the future, but they're counting on me for this year. Whether he's not healthy or not, at a certain point, I don't know what you can do to bring him back when he's too far gone. And defensively, he looks like he's already too far gone. If he already is too far gone defensively and he's putting too much undue pressure on himself offensively, there's going to be a breaking point, and I don't know that you can get him back for this year.
Maybe not. Maybe you can. Maybe it's too far. Maybe he needs the offseason to really trust that shoulder again, and to the confidence you can see is just gone. Yep. And he's getting overmatched. He's striking out a ton. Even the balls that he hit well this weekend, the double in the left center field, like, he's not hitting the ball with tons of authority. He's not letting it rip when he's throwing the ball in. Like, you can tell that maybe he's 100%, but he's still, like, psychologically doesn't believe in it. And I think you're ruining his confidence more by playing him every single day than you would if you just sent him down to Sugarland to try to get an idea of, let's try to build the confidence.
Yeah, maybe just from a been there, done that, and always done it well here standpoint, he can feel comfortable again and get some reps in and understand this isn't a demotion for the long term, but it's in the best interest of you. And on the flip side, getting back to our conversation about, because you have the big lead and what you need to do to get ready for the playoffs, it gives you the opportunity to see if Chaz can be your everyday center fielder.
Yeah.
Play Tucker out there, as we talked about last week, and see if he wants to, and he can, and he's capable of being just a decent center fielder, so that you have another option or two with Chaz and or with Tucker. There's nothing wrong with that, because you got a double-digit lead.
And another thing, like, if you do send him down, and I really do think that's the play here. Like, I get the idea of wanting Jake Myers to be your center fielder by the playoffs. I really do, because Jake Myers, in my mind, has more potential than Chaz McCormick. I think he's a better, like, he's got more upside than Chaz. He's got more upside than Mauricio Dubon. And in fact, if he played anything like he did last year, you'd be happy with what he's giving you in center field, but he's not playing to that level. So I get the logic here. I get the logic of, let's run out Jake Myers every day with the idea that he's going to figure it out by October. So I get that. But the way he's struggling right now, I don't feel like it's in his best interest to be playing at this level with the struggles he's having. I think the best interest for him would be to go to Sugarland, try to work on the confidence, try to get it figured out down there without the pressure of Major League Baseball and being in a race for the best record in the American League.
And look no further than what they did with Siri, right? When Siri was struggling mightily at the Major League level, except for defensively, when they want, you know, also because they didn't have any trouble, but when they sent him down, you know what he did? He went off for like 6 bombs and 14 RBIs and got his confidence back offensively, so that when they brought him back up, if he did get in a bat or two, he didn't look overmatched or mentally like he was already digging himself a hole. You can do the same thing for Jake Myers, and in the short term, it might be your last hope to figure out how he can get positively mentally set again before the playoffs start.
And look, I get that they love his defense, and ultimately, like, he is their best defensive center fielder. But he could be one of your September call-ups. He could be on the playoff roster as a defensive backup, right? Late inning substitution for Chaz to upgrade defensively in center field. But if you're working on your game, it's better to work on your game in Sugarland than it is at the big league level. It's like if you're, you know, working on your golf game, it's better to do it on the range than to get out there with $100 skins on every single hole playing against your buddies.
If I got 100 in with a wedge and I haven't been hitting my wedge well, I'd rather, you know, have been working it out on the range than realizing I could cost myself rent money.
Yep. Tank Ortiz asking us, so on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. So what if he goes down to Sugarland and sucks there too? I'd rather him suck in Sugarland than suck with the Houston Astros, but then it also gives you some information and intel that he's probably just not ready in 2022, and then you probably don't feel confident about his future,
well,
for being completely honest.
Maybe James Click a little bit, because I responded to that and said, you got to find out somehow, some way, right?
Right.
And you don't know when. Now, you can blame it on injuries and say, okay, well, now we know we can't use him this year, and you hope that resetting the batteries and getting healthy means he's going to come out with a new outlook, work on some things in the offseason. But you can't put yourself in the predicament of feeling like you have to put him out there in the playoffs and he's overmatched mentally or physically.
Yeah, I mean, I really get the logic of Jake Meyers is our best center fielder, potentially. Because I agree with that logic. I really do. I think Jake Meyers potentially is your best center fielder that you currently have in this organization. So I get Click's idea of we're just going to run him out there every single day until he figures it out because we had the luxury of playing for the postseason. It's the same conversation we were having with Yordan. The reason you don't play Yordan in left field is because you can't run the risk of losing your best offensive player. Same thing with Jake Meyers. They have the luxury for the rest of the regular season to try to get him right by the time the postseason runs around or comes around. I just think that the best way to get him right is to work on the game in Sugarland as opposed to going 0-for-4 with three strikeouts every single night with the big league Astros. It's not great for Jake Meyers' confidence, in my opinion. 713-780-ESPN is the time right to look in a different direction in center field. 713-780-3776. All right. Have you ever hung on to a show that just doesn't feel like it has it anymore? You're just trying to hold on for the show that you've loved, but you get into a final season or two and it's just not there anymore. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Have you ever hung on to a show that just doesn't feel like it has it anymore? 713-780-ESPN. What is that show for you? 713-780-3776. Brendan, what is that show for you?
Westworld, man.
Westworld? What is that?
Are you not familiar with Westworld?
I've heard about it. I'm giving you some grief.
Well, HBO show, so I don't know. I didn't give me any grief. HBO makes good stuff.
They do.
And the first season, it's like this theme park where you have all these robots, that it's like, dude, it's an AI show.
Alan Iverson?
No. Oh. Artificial intelligence, where they obviously become sentient and they take over the world.
So it's iRobot with Will Smith.
It's way better. the first season was some of the best TV. Like, I would say the first season of Westworld is probably one of my favorite, like, five or six seasons of any TV show ever. And then season two I didn't care for. Season three brought me back in a little bit. But every Sunday I get myself ready to watch. And I feel like I'm dragging along at this point. I feel like I'm investing. And HBO shows a lot of times go like over an hour at times.
Yeah.
Like I'm investing so much of my time watching the show because of what it once was. And it's – I don't know. It's kind of heartbreaking in a way because it had so much potential. It was such a good show. And I'm just wasting my time watching it now, but I can't let it go.
See, you know my thoughts on television and my thoughts on movies. Like, I can't do anything that I don't believe could potentially happen. Now, I'm willing to go far-fetched. I'm willing to do fiction. But if there's anything that I can't believe could happen in our existence, I'm out. I can't do it. I can't watch those shows.
I'm kind of with you on
that's
that.
That's such a sci-fi. Take.
Yeah, the sci-fi element is something that I'm out on. And the whole going back, the whole Game of Thrones thing and the whole medieval and all, I can't do that either.
I watch Game of Thrones only for my wife, and I only watched the last season, which, like, if we're asking this question to you, 713-780-ESPN, have you ever hung on to a show that just doesn't feel like it has it anymore? For Brendan, it's Westworld. I just can't get into the sci-fi, things that are, you know, not in the imaginable.
I'm with you.
A lot of people thought Game of Thrones, and that was the only season of Game of Thrones that I watched because I watched it for my wife. That's not my cup of tea. Like, dragons flying through the sky, I'm out. I just can't. I can't believe it. I can't get entrenched in it.
And I'm with you. Everybody doesn't have the same cup of tea. Look, it's just not my cup of tea. I'm not saying don't watch it. I'm not saying you're a loser or an idiot for watching it. I'm just saying I can't get into it. But I'm sure that there are plenty of shows that I watched. You guys like, what, you know, why would you watch that or what the hell? But different strokes for different folks. I think for me, there were two. I mean, and I think that you could actually sauce these things up a little bit too. But I think the one, I'm big on the house flipping stuff. Mm-hmm. And the one that was really cool was they had one based in Las Vegas. So it was like all these different houses in these different markets, and then they'd get robbed or there'd be different elements that would come into play. I'm like, that's pretty cool. But then after a while, I started going, now how many of these are they setting up and how many of these things are really reality? And then when I started thinking, if it's not reality TV and you're actually altering it for the sake of video, like Storage Wars. I think Storage Wars sometimes is cool, but I'd like an occasional fight for you with the drama. I'd like some occasional, like, you know, issues to pop up that I don't feel were forced, and then I'm out.
I would have never guessed. And it's kind of funny. I would have never guessed reality TV as an answer to this question.
Yeah, me either. Like
not like Big Brother, because that or
no,
or
but
like
still,
a dating
you're still talking
show.
About reality TV.
But yeah, it was cool. I mean, look, the husband and wife team, and the wife was kind of hot, and then their assistant wasn't
did she,
too bad.
Did she get less attractive? Is that why you're out?
No, and I think the assistant, which I think she had a different occupation in Vegas at one point, but she had kind of elevated to being into real estate, and you could find some deals, and they did some things and made some things happen in different like transactions. I was like, that's interesting to me. And then kind of from a house perspective, how I could fix up things in my house. But then there started to be like the time that, you know, they bought a house from somebody that was foreclosed on, and there was like, it started out with all these satellite dishes and electronics, and the next thing you know, there were like guns and weapons, and people were shooting into the front windows. I'm like, I don't think that's happening.
So
in
these
Vegas
are your, these are your favorite shows?
You always bag on me for what I watch. I just got done saying it's not everybody's cup of tea.
The text line is just absolutely ripping us. 713-780-ESPN if you want to continue to rip us, saying that we're just vanilla and bland when it comes to our TVs. 0446 says, so you wouldn't watch Game of Thrones because it has dragons flying and that's unbelievable. Do you only watch documentaries? I don't know how you can go.
I love documentaries.
I do too, but I mean, I don't know how you can go from me not liking dragons flying to the only thing I watch is documentaries.
There's no middle, Jeremy.
There's no middle. I just got done watching Bear yesterday, which was was really good. If you're looking, like, to me, those are the kind of I love a good story. I love a good plot that could happen in our existence, that could happen in our real life.
But you didn't love The Captain, and I'm still watching it.
The documentary there. Yeah. I like a lot of TV shows. I love to watch TV shows. Like the ones that I've watched recently, Bear, The Morning Show is another one that I've really enjoyed. There's a lot of stuff on HBO that are really good, to what Brendan was mentioning. Nothing that, like, to me, it was like a bunch of old school stuff. The Wire. I love Curb. Curb hasn't been on in a while, though. Hopefully that's coming back soon. But what are those shows, 713-780-ESPN, that you hang on to that just don't feel like it has it anymore? For me, like, I went sitcom here. Like, I used to love The Office. But once Steve Carell left, like, to me, it lost all of its luster. Like, I don't even think I finished watching the last few seasons of The Office.
I loved Entourage back in the day. Yeah. But even then, I never saw the movie. And at a certain point, I'm like, okay, they're just trying to hang on and they're just trying to force feed too much and work in porn stars. And I'm like, okay, I'm out.
I felt about Entourage the same way I felt about Ballers, where it was just kind of like meh TV. Like, it was kind of like thoughtless entertainment.
At first, I was seeing, like, how are you going to work in, like, the athletes and their cameos, and how are you going to work in to see, and knowing, how sports agents and work, I'm curious to see if they could get close to making it reality.
Like, it was all right.
And at a certain point, you're like, okay, I've seen enough.
Yeah, it was like, it's all right. It's just like kind of thoughtless TV as you watch, you fall asleep. Total Dallas is saying Walking Dead as one of the shows that you try to hang on, but it's lost its luster by the end of it.
Is that a zombie show?
I think so, yeah. That's another one. That's another one I'm not going to watch.
This is as much of a me thing. Like, it's not just a TV thing. This is just who I am. But if I once loved a TV show, I will almost definitely watch it till the end, no matter how much I dislike it the rest of the way.
See.
Like, I'm going to watch. If Westworld goes 15 seasons, I will watch every episode and hate my life for the hour every single week if it's what I have to do. I can't let a TV show that once caught my attention go.
See, I'm the same way. Like, I usually see it through. Now, sitcoms are a little different because they're not really following a story and, like, a plot. They don't have, like, a finish line. I felt like Yellowstone this past season was not nearly as good as the previous seasons of Yellowstone. I felt the same way about – what was the other show? I felt the same way about The Morning Show. Like, season one of The Morning Show, fantastic. Season two was kind of like, meh, I'm not sure I want to keep watching this. Handmaid's Tale was one, too, that I felt like first couple seasons, awesome. But then she got out of that little bubble, and it's like, oh, this is boring now.
Well, and to me, it's like, that's why I like the more reality TV that still has a plot line. That's why I started watching Million Dollar Listing New York because of my wife. Then I got into it. And again, it kind of like the outlandish pricing and what people put in their like shoebox sized apartments and houses in New York is one thing. But then you translate. And then when that show is finished for the year, and there's fighting and there's bickering and stuff like that. So you can see how it finishes in the finale. But then you move out to L.A. for Million Dollar Listing L.A., and you see how the other half lives with, like, these big, slavish spreads and $50 million palaces and how these guys are just rolling in dough. And I'm like, and I'm not the only one. I know a lot of my buddies that are like, that's my, you know, under the radar. I love those shows. And I'm like, dude, I could sit there and watch, you know, a marathon of those and be into it.
8779 says House of Cards. Understand that Spacey had to leave, but it sucked after that. House of Cards was actually one that I started that
he
I
may never
finish.
Work again, period.
I don't think he has. Yeah, I think he's probably
well,
done.
And he's gotten in more hot water.
Has he?
Oh, yeah. He's had more incidents.
I didn't know about that. But, yeah, House of Cards was one that I started that I didn't finish. 2336 says Lost. Too long. Did y'all watch Lost?
No.
Lost was one that a lot of people say good things about that I never
got into it,
watched.
But, again, kind of like you were saying, I mean, once I found out the plot line and everything, the storyline, and I'm like, how long are these freaking guys going to sit? Look, if that overweight guy is on the island for that long, he ain't going to be that overweight because food is not a plenty. I don't understand how he's staying overweight.
Lost is probably one of my top five shows of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard great things about it, but I've never watched it.
It definitely loses the plot a little bit towards the end, but it didn't, like, Westworld has totally lost me. I am not enjoying the show anymore. Yeah. I am watching it and regretting it.
See, that's the thing, too, is whenever they lose the plot. Like, I felt Ozark. Ozark, one of my favorite shows. The last two episodes of Ozark, I felt like I was watching a totally different show. I'll be completely honest. I was like, okay, this isn't the Ozark that I fell in love with. And it's not to say it was bad, but it was just so different that it made me kind of question, you know, the ending a bit.
Like Hector, who is one of our most loyal listeners, one of the not one of the worst texter we have, says Joel believes that This Is Us went on too long. No, I believe that. Yeah, not only do I believe that it went on too long, I could never stomach a full episode, and I could never understand why people want to intentionally cry every week. I understand in a finale or in a big dramatic, like, you know, leading up to event in, yeah, as part of a series for a year. But if you're going to cry every freaking week, isn't life enough to make you cry sometimes to just say, yeah, I don't need that?
I don't mind a sap story every now and then, but every single week is a bit much. I never watched This Is Us. I'm trying to think. I think my wife did, but I never watched it with her. Lamont said The Blacklist is one. He said, also, I used to like Empire until they began forcing certain agendas. I think that Empire was the one on Fox, right, with the Josette kid that faked the own crime, right? That was Empire, right?
Smollett.
I think I watched the first two to three episodes or seasons of Empire 2, but it's another one that kind of started to lose its luster for me, and I was out. 713-780-ESPN. What are the shows to you that you started and you just got to hang on, but they lose the luster at the end? Eric the Driver said Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, and Lost. That's pretty much the most popular ones: Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, and Westworld.
And Ocho said, and I don't disagree, anything that Dick Wolf produces. Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, any of the Law and Order or some of the SVUs.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to watch the whole series, but if you catch, you know, every now and then, you can still catch a good episode that'll get your attention.
Yeah. How much TV do you watch, Brendan? Like, how many episodes, like, how many shows that people, you know, recommend are you watching?
A lot of times I go in waves. Like, when I get really into a show, I'll watch only TV. But then I could go, honestly, I go weeks without watching TV.
Really? See, I watch tons of television. Like, that's one of the, like, my wife and I, one of our favorite things to do is to, like, watch the shows that are critically acclaimed. But, like, we'll start shows, and if they don't catch our interest, we're, like, out. We're out within, like, two or three episodes. So we start pretty much everything, but then there's a lot that just don't captivate us to where we're, see ya.
Very rarely start a show and end up not enjoying it. I think I have a pretty good read on what I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah. Have you seen Bear?
And not even, Bears, I don't even know
Bear,
what Bear
it's
is.
It's on Hulu. It's really good. The second to last episode of Bear was like 25 minutes of the most intense television I've ever seen, and it's in a kitchen. But it was it's really good. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Twitch saying, how do you judge what you didn't watch? You treat The Office like Davis Mills. Somebody else, Cougar Blaze on Twitch, said the 2019 World Series. That's another very good one. All right, a team in the NFL has gone worst to first in 17 of the last 19 years. Who will it be this year? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.